Welcome to the Every Brain Matters podcast called It's Just Pot, What's the Problem? I'm your host, Aubrey Adams, a former Colorado mom and a host mom for youth in recovery. And I'm director of Every Brain Matters, a community of support, advocacy, and science. Today, we welcome Michelle Leopold. Today, we talk to Michelle Leopold, a tweeting activist and one tough mother. But most importantly, she is a voice for her son, Trevor, who was diagnosed with severe cannabis use disorder and died from a fentanyl pill. Michelle, welcome, and please answer this question. It's just pot. What's the problem?
Thanks, Aubrey. Gosh, if I had a dollar for every time I've heard that. It's not just pot. Today's pot is not the same as the pot that we grew up with in high school or college. Today's pot is 10 to 100 times more potent than what we know about. And it's one of the things I need to continue to use my son's story to illustrate how important it is to realize that today's pot is not the same as the pot of the 60s, 70s, 80s, or even early 90s.
Let's talk about Trevor. Can you describe how his life was like prior to his use of marijuana?
Sure. So Trevor is my nature boy. He's always had a fondness for animals. We always had a rotating zoo at our house. We had always dogs, rats, guinea pigs. We would raise frogs from polywogs, tadpoles, depending on what you call them. And then you'd have to buy crickets to feed them. Every once in a while, we'd catch a lizard. Always a life of animals here. Trevor and his brother Parker both were rock hounds when they were younger. They have huge rock collections. One of my favorite rock collection memories is Trevor, when we were up north in California, we were at a rock shop and he found a fossil. And I wish I remembered what it was, but he used his hard-earned allowance money and paid over $50 for one rock because it was so important for him to have in his collection. And speaking of rocks, whenever we would hike, he could find heart-shaped rocks and he would give them to me no matter where we were. We would be on the beach and there's just sand and shells and he would find heart-shaped rocks. Anyway, Trevor was major nature boy. He also was a daredevil. He loved snowboarding, skiing, skateboarding once he got a little bit older. And he had a huge heart. He was so giving. He's always the person that would give you the shirt off his back to make somebody comfortable. Mm.
I feel like I get to know him more and more every time I speak to you. And let's get to the hard part now. When Trevor started using, do you know how old he was? And could you describe how he changed at that point?
Definitely, Aubrey. It was the end of his freshman year. He was 15 years old. And he even told me, he said, Mom, I tried marijuana and it made me feel really good and it made me feel like I fit in and everybody was really nice to me. And I was like, wow, okay, interesting. And then I realized that my child changed all of his friends suddenly and went from doing well in school to not doing well in school. getting in trouble with the police, missing class. And then the most noticeable for me was this lovely, dear, sweet child became violent. And we realized it was when he was coming down off of his high potency THC, we presume, he became really violent, up to punching holes in the wall, breaking things around the house. And I immediately knew there was something. And I also knew that it wasn't just pot. I think I've shared with some of the Every Brain Matters people on the Facebook page that, gosh, 6 years ago, I started a website because I had all this information about it's not just pot. And I created a website called My Kid Smokes Pot, Now What? And I put local information mostly because I wanted to let other parents know if their teen was having these sorts of problems. This is the information I found in our community, and maybe it would help other people, because you can't really take a billboard out saying, my 16-year-old is off the rails, everybody. Hey, I'm that PTA mom that you think of so highly, but forget it. I'm actually a shitty mom whose kid is in trouble with the law. So I created this website and started a underground railroad of sorts. And people, I could tell my closest friends what was going on. And then when people had a friend whose kid was off the rails, they say, hey, call my friend Michelle. And almost every single person, it was just pot.
Coming up with similar behaviors as your son is, Trevor, I can say that I am one of those parents, and I experienced those same behaviors with my loved one also. So thank you for being honest and vulnerable, sharing that. I know there sometimes a lot of families live in shame and don't want to talk about that. And so by having this conversation, bringing it up, talking about it openly, we can let people know that it's okay to share. It's okay to reach out. It's okay to seek answers and support. And so thank you for being that voice, Michelle. That's amazing.
And even if you're not comfortable speaking publicly, like I wasn't, but while Trevor was alive, I was saying, that was Trevor's story to tell. It's not my story. However, I had Narnon, and I went to Narnon meetings, and that's where I found my community of people who got it in a way that other people didn't. And I similarly know that you're part of Maranon, and that is so important to find that community where you can talk about it, because it's a horrible thing to think you're the only person. And it is helpful to be able to talk to other people.
That's such a good point you brought up. So if there's any families listening, seek out that support where you're comfortable, where you feel like sharing, whether it's Narnon, Maranon, Al-Anon. I know there's other support groups out there too. You know, whatever the stigma is around that, just try it. Try it, take what you like, leave the rest. And if that you don't like that meeting, try a different meeting until you find the connection you need. Because we learn those slogans in our support groups. We're just as sick as our secrets. So if we carry this, our health is affected. And that's why they call it a family disease. So thank you for saying that, Michelle. Now let's get to the really hard part. Let's talk more a little bit about Trevor. And I know he did get a diagnosis of severe cannabis use disorder. Is that correct?
Right. So he, at the beginning of his sophomore year, he was unable to go to stay in class. He didn't get his driver's license. So I was still driving him to school. And literally, I would have to have chained him or handcuffed him to a desk in order for him to stay in class. And he's even shared in some of his writings how the only thing on his mind was getting high. So we had him gooned, classy term for kidnapping and taken to rehab. And while he was there, he was diagnosed with cannabis use disorder. And that helped explain a lot. And over the next 3 years, he would get clean, but he also said, "Mom, I don't want to stop." And until he turned 18, I could do everything as a parent of a under 18-year-old to try and keep him safe. But once he turned 18 years old, he was an adult, and you can't kidnap your child at that point and have them sent to rehab. Gratefully, he had some really beautiful, clear, sober months in rehab and shortly thereafter. And he graduated from high school. He was accepted to multiple Cal States. And he chose to go to Sonoma State, which is about an hour north of where we are, north of San Francisco. And I was really grateful to see him launch and try out his wings. And I thought that he had the tools through his multiple rehabs, 12-step work, counselors, all of the tools that we had given him that he had used successfully or not successfully. I thought he could hopefully navigate the 4 years ahead for college and get that brain fully formed and keep them alive till they're 25. And then hopefully after they're 25, they're out of that danger zone. Sadly, Trevor kept on looking for a higher high when he was in college. And although marijuana was his drug of choice, he did experiment. And sadly, the weekend of November 17th, 2019, he bought some, what he thought was oxycodone. But one of those oxycodone had a lethal dose of fentanyl in it. And he died in his dorm room at age 18, not even 19.
Michelle, when you got that phone call that your son was deceased in his dorm room, can you describe that moment for us?
No. The worst. There's a whole story that goes along with it, but it's just absolute unbelievableness, denial. And then there's that noise, and other parents who have lost a child know what that noise is. It's this primal scream that comes out of the deepest, darkest part of your body that there's just no words. And it's horrific. It's definitely the worst news in the world. It's so out of order. It's so wrong. And and you can't ever reverse it.
Thank you for being vulnerable like that and sharing that moment. And I know there'll be other families that'll hear your words and know that they're not alone, and hopefully reach out to everyone, and we can just build more of a community as we're moving forward through this nightmare. And so thank you. Michelle, could you describe to me now, you know, how long has it been since Trevor's passed? And then what is your life like now?
Sure, Aubrey. So the night that Trevor died, my husband and I looked at each other shortly after we realized the truth of the situation. And I said, we can't be quiet about this. There's too many people who say my child died suddenly of heart condition, or they don't see anything at all. But I sadly knew of the increasing amount of harm that today's THC products were causing. And our family had been impacted by the death of somebody who was 19 years old by a fentanyl-laced Xanax just 4 months before Trevor died. And so when the coroner did call, I said, I'm guessing it's fentanyl. And he said, well, it'll take about 2 months to get the toxicology report, but I would assume it's fentanyl also. And I just knew in my heart that most likely it was fentanyl. I prayed because I understand that fentanyl deaths are rapid and painless. And because it was the beginning of a mounting crisis, we decided we were going to use Trevor's voice, since we weren't allowed to while he was alive, to share his story in order to hopefully save other lives going forward. And that has totally altered the whole trajectory of my own life. And it's a dark, dark life, no matter what, when your child has died. But as my husband reminds me, how can you talk about death every day? And I say, in order to keep other people alive. So this is my new life, and I don't wish it upon anyone. And I just hope that some of the efforts that all of these parents in this horrific club that none of us want to be in, that some of our words make a difference and save lives.
Amen. Amen to that. And thank you for choosing to do that. What are some of the solutions that you would like to see in place, policy-wise, education-wise? What are some of your thoughts around that you would like to see positive changes so we don't have so many children and even adults dying of this drug culture expansion?
How long do we have? Five hours. So I personally put my efforts into two categories. I concentrate on what I know well. So I know the harm to youth, meaning people under 25 whose brains are not fully formed, and the danger that today's high potency THC has. So that is one bucket that I am a activist around. And the other is around the harm to especially teenagers that are experimenting with drugs or experimenting, period, with whatever substances. And the fact that one pill can kill. It is horrific how many parents I have met whose children have died similarly to Trevor. And they said they didn't even know what fentanyl was before their child died. So by advocating around these two areas, I hope to make change. In the marijuana area, in California, we're currently working on warning labels. And similarly to your question at the beginning, it's just pot. That's the question I get. Why warning labels? Because it's not just pot. And I'm so tired of people saying it's just pot. It's not just pot. And people need to learn that. And perhaps by seeing that warning label, they'll realize that it also is dangerous and addictive, just like the warning labels on tobacco and alcohol do. But today's THC is something that most people still don't even know about. And there's this false narrative of this organic, healthy substance that the cannabis industry likes to promote that is so wrong. And there are so many instances of children that are permanently damaged or dead from just pot. So that is what I'm currently working on in marijuana. My goal for this year is I want to introduce the same youth harm around today's THC products, all of the legislation that Colorado did last November to overwhelming bipartisan support. I want to introduce that in California. So that is what is on my list here. And then around fentanyl, it is letting people know that fentanyl is changing the whole narrative of today's drug culture. And there's three buckets of the fentanyl deaths. There is the hardcore users, which I'm part of a group that covers all three groups, called Mothers Against Drug Deaths 2. And we have within our group, we have people whose kids were in San Francisco area. So we have people whose kids are actively using fentanyl on the streets of San Francisco and are addicted to fentanyl. We have people whose kids, like Trevor, were in active addiction, but weren't necessarily addicted to fentanyl, but are adversely affected by today's drugs that predominantly contain fentanyl and or died, like Trevor. And then there's the teenagers. So these three groups, which are very different, all are being drastically affected by fentanyl. And the teenagers are doing what teenagers do, whether it's alcohol, marijuana, Xanax, Percocet, but they're experimenting. Sorry, my dog is rolling over on the table. Sorry that I'm bouncing all over the screen. But I have a very comfortable dog is the important thing, right? But anyway, the teenagers are experimenting with drugs and they're answering ads that they get served a lot on Snapchat or Instagram. And it's not very expensive. And they're trying one Percocet or one Xanax. And I was on a call last week with Song for Charlie, which is a great group about youth harm from fentanyl. And it was all parents who had lost a child to fentanyl poisoning. And some of these parents, their kids had used one quarter of a pill, and a quarter of a pill had killed their child because they divided the pill in force and the other three kids were all alive and told the parents what had happened. So, and we have people that are 12 years old, 13 years old, 14, 15, that are dying by fentanyl poisoning. So these kids need to know that one pill can kill. And everybody needs to know that fentanyl is in today's drug supply. And that is where my activism around fentanyl is focused.
Oh, Michelle, thank you for explaining it, especially in those three buckets. I think it's so important that parents know that our kids have access to these drugs, whether they're legal or not, they have access and they are experimenting. And you don't have to be addicted to any drug to die from any drug, especially the fentanyl that is everywhere. Like you said, it's in every drug and it's being ordered to our homes. And let's talk about, I mean, there's all these different pathways to fentanyl, you know, there's similarities in stories. And then there's, you know, there's always somebody that's kind of goes at it a different way, but this experimentation that was a normal part of growing up, risk-taking, all that kind of stuff is now at a new level. So now our message to our kids is, hey, there's real danger here. We need you to be honest about this and get as much help and support as you can. And know, like you said, one pill can kill. And one pathway that I see a lot is kids are using a lot of marijuana, and unfortunately, it's the high THC concentration that you started educating about years ago. And they mix it with Xanax because marijuana can induce anxiety and paranoia, and the Xanax decreases that somewhat. And a lot of times the Xanax pills are fentanyl pills, and these children are literally being poisoned and dying. So could you share a pathway, or is that something you see similar to or hear about?
Yeah, well, even just marijuana is being laced with fentanyl. I read about, I believe you were from Pueblo, Colorado, and Pueblo last week was reporting fentanyl-laced marijuana. And so you don't even need to add anything to it. I understand that a lot of the cartels, if you will, are adding fentanyl to their drug supply to get more addicts. And so I would like to believe that this will be the end of recreational drug use as more and more fentanyl, as the numbers continue to rise. When I first started advocating, the number that the DEA was promoting was 1 in 4 pills that was confiscated had a lethal dose of fentanyl in it. And today it's 2 out of 5. And I won't be surprised to see that number continue to increase as our death by fentanyl poisoning continues to increase in the past couple of years too. Yeah. So there are a lot of ways either to become addicted to fentanyl or die by fentanyl. And sadly, a lot of the I didn't see it coming stories are from teenagers or parent families of teenagers, because teenagers have always been known to think that they're invincible. Trevor, for instance, is a great example of that. I think I mentioned that just a couple of months before he died, one of his closest friends had died. This young man died on his 19th birthday by one Xanax that had a lethal dose of fentanyl in it. And Trevor knew that that was the story, and he knew that fentanyl-laced pills existed. He knew that one pill could kill. But it'll never happen to you, right? So the invincibility part is always part of growing up, but that's why we just have to keep on educating and putting warning labels on things and talking with real words, not scare tactics, but truth about what's happening out there. And that's why I bring pictures of the teenagers when I go and speak to teenagers. I show them kids their age that have died by fentanyl poisoning. And almost none of them were quote unquote addicts. So anyway, back to your question, there are ways to get addicted to fentanyl. Yes, I absolutely believe that marijuana is what almost every single person starts with. I don't think very many people said, hey, I think I'm going to try meth today. Most people that if you talk to people at recovery meetings, most of them will say I started with marijuana or alcohol or a combination of the two. And in a lot of states, these are legal drugs. And then it's just a matter of what can I mix it with and what am I trying to achieve? And hopefully you'll live to talk about your experimentation instead of dying from your experimentation.
Yeah. And I really love the way you keep bringing up the honesty part of this conversation and the connection. So we encourage youth, we encourage parents to have these hard conversations because it could save their life. There's no shame in asking for help. There's no shame going to treatment. There's no shame going to support meetings. And I know Michelle is just a warrior. She's so courageous. And she tells her story because she doesn't want you to live what she's lived. And every day I see her making tweets and being on social media and just pouring out love and support to her community and people across America, speaking the truth, wanting to have these conversations. So elected officials, hear Michelle. She is Trevor's voice. And we so appreciate her being with us today. And I think I just want to end with one more thing, Michelle. Would you be willing to read Trevor's letter he wrote to you and your husband when he was in treatment?
Happily. And before I read that, I do want to say that there should be no stigma around having Narcan at your house. And I encourage everyone, if you have a fire extinguisher at your house, you should also have Narcan at your house. Because you have a fire extinguisher doesn't mean you're an arsonist. Because you have Narcan at your house doesn't mean you're an addict. You can't Narcan yourself also, but you could save a life if you have Narcan. So Google Narcan in my area. More and more public health organizations are giving out Narcan, or you can buy it for not very much from your pharmacy. Some pharmacies are giving it out. And that is one of the ways we can keep more people alive. So I do want to make sure that people know that Narcan at this point is the only thing that can reverse a opioid overdose or fentanyl poisoning, as the case may be, because we don't really think that the pill has fentanyl in it. We think that it's Xanax, Percocet, oxycodone. So I do want to share that.
Thank you for sharing that. Do you know how many doses a person should have on hand? Do they educate that?
Yes. Yeah, so most boxes. So if you get the nasal kind of Narcan, it comes 2 doses in 1 box. And that is essentially enough Narcan to keep someone alive in time for the first responders to show up. Generally, first responders will put in an IV drip of Narcan when they show up. So 1 box of Narcan, 2 doses, about 5 minutes apart is probably a good time. And that gives you 5 to 10 minutes until the first responders show up. There's great resources online. Personally, my favorite is Shatterproof. I think they have an excellent video that talks about how to use Narcan and how easy it is and some of the important things to keep in mind, depending on who's using and how severe their addiction is. Once, if heaven forbid, you use those 2 doses, go get another box. Yes. In Marin County, we have all sorts of places that you can get it for free. And I'm really grateful about that.
Yeah, they are handing them out for free everywhere. So don't feel like it's an expense or anything that's going to inconvenience you. And always get on the phone with 911. If you're unsure, they'll walk you through it and let you know what to do to save that person's life, because it is a life-saving drug.
And it's a great thing. One of the things I'm really proud of is my 19-year-old son, Parker, is now getting phone calls from his friends from high school that are all across the country. And they call him and they say, "Hey, dude, I'm in whatever state. We're having this party next weekend. It should be a rager, but I'm really concerned that somebody might die or overdose from fentanyl in a pill. How can I get Narcan?" And I am so grateful that he gets those phone calls. And then I appreciate, if he doesn't know the answer, he calls mom. "Mom, how can we find Narcan in this state or that state?" So generally Googling free Narcan near me is a good start, but I'm happy to help people also. And you can find me on Twitter, 50 Random Acts is my handle. My Facebook is semi-private, but I'm happy to add you if you can get through to me. If you're friends with Aubrey, then you can get through to me easily. But I use my middle, my maiden name as my middle name, Michelle Sabke Leopold. But I am here to be a resource, and I am happy to help and happy to keep you anonymous if that's what you want.
Thank you for that, Michelle. And we'll put all those links in the discussion, so you don't have to go searching. Just scroll down and you'll find all the links Michelle just talked about.
Great. So I would be happy to read this very, very painful letter of accountability that Trevor wrote for some of the people who are familiar with wilderness programs. Trevor spent 3 months in Utah in the wilderness during the winter when it dropped down below freezing. And he actually, I don't know if you can see that poster on the wall, but he had everything he had on his back for 3 months. He never went into a building, no bathrooms, no showers. They did everything out in the wilderness for 3 months. And during that time, the parents don't get to talk to their children. They only get to write a letter once a week. And so one of the important letters is when the child reaches a point where they can be held accountable for what happened while they were at home in their addiction. And this is Trevor's letter of accountability. And I'm going to just read, it's long, it's 5 pages long. So I'm going to just read the important parts that really address his addiction. Because as I shared with the three buckets of people dying from fentanyl, Trevor was in the middle bucket. He wasn't a experimenter, not having tried much drugs. He had some drug knowledge enough that he had to go to rehab type programs. But he also wasn't on the streets, homeless. I was going to say he always had a roof over his head, but he didn't while he was in wilderness, but it was okay. So this is his letter of accountability. Dear mom and dad, as you probably already know, I am writing a letter of accountability to you. In this letter, I will talk about my past actions and what was going on for me. I know now my using has affected you. My using made me lose motivation for school. I would sometimes ditch class and get high with friends. This led to falling further behind in school. I still wanted to succeed academically, but when I showed up to class, I often wouldn't know what's going on and I'd leave. This made me feel inadequate and embarrassed. I had a tunnel vision toward getting high, as it's all I could think of. I also recognized that I have problems with the law, and I've gotten in trouble with the police on more than one occasion. An example of this is the incident that ended me up in juvie and eventually going to the program, the wilderness program. That was part of his, instead of going to juvenile hall and being on probation, they agreed that going to a wilderness program would work for his parole. I started arguing. I got up in your face and yelled through my backpack at a wall. I even got up in the police officers' faces and ended up at Marin General, where they 5150'd him and they released him to juvie. At this point, I knew I needed help and I agreed to get it. I was in denial of lots of things, including my using and all aspects of my home life. I denied I had a problem with drugs, and I denied that they had an effect on the way I acted. I also denied when I got in trouble. An example is when you'd find my drugs or smell it, and I would say that I'm holding it for someone, for a friend, or that I wasn't doing anything. I tried to lie and deny to make you not as disappointed in me, and also so I could keep doing what I was doing. This damaged our relationship, and I always felt disappointed in myself. When I used, there was always a lack of honesty and communication because I felt like you would always fear the truth. This made me feel sad that I couldn't openly talk about everything. Often I'd hang out with friends and lie about my whereabouts. This made you guys scared, especially when I disappear for a couple of days and you'd have no idea where I was. Not only did my actions affect you, but it also affected Parker. That's his younger brother. When I couldn't provide for my using, I started selling to gain extra money. I would sell to my friends so I could have a little extra pocket change to provide for my using. I got a natural high from selling, and this fueled my self-esteem, my self-image, making me feel better about myself. I loved the rush that drugs and selling gave me, and I chased that high, which led me to stealing. I didn't do this too often, but when I did, I would steal from other kids to get the high, get what I wanted, and to boost my self-esteem. My morals and beliefs did not match up with my actions. I often felt bad about what I was doing. I felt haunted by the damage I caused to the family and your property. I recognize why you took such actions in the past and lost my trust. In this letter, I hope you can see the truth in me for taking accountability for my actions. And in the future, I'd like to be able to communicate openly and assertively. Love you, Trevor. And that full letter is posted on Every Brain Matters.
Thank you, Michelle. And we will have a link to Michelle's full story in the discussion part, the description part of this podcast. And we just really want to give our deepest condolences to you and your family and all the other families affected.
Thanks, Aubrey. And thank you so much for letting us say their name, because that's something that us going through this unimaginable grief, they're still our children and we still love them. And you've heard me say a million times, Trevor is everywhere. Trevor is still here. And I'm not going to forget that I had a firstborn named Trevor. And I want to talk about him. It's just not the way I thought I'd be talking about him. Oftentimes I say, Trevor, I thought I'd be teaching you about the world, but instead I'm teaching the world about Trevor. So thank you for using Every Brain Matters to teach the world a little bit about my beautiful boy. And hopefully his memory will help save lives.
Thank you, Michelle. We will always honor Trevor, always remember him. And I honor you for all your courage and strength and continue to raise awareness. We love you.
Love you, Aubrey. Thank you.
Please join us at everybrainmatters.org. Help us raise our voices in the impacts of the marijuana expansion, because it's not just pot. Thank you.